Shall we continue, then? Which story shall we read today? We did the false hero yesterday, so shall we move on to Sleeping Beauty? No. No, I think there are some other people who need stories. They don't seem to know how they go. You need to tell them, to tell them the stories. But Blake, I go. And I was gone. This land is horrible. Chaos, a mess. There's a kind of structure, a mind working over all of it, but there is no resolution. Things start, they progress, they end, but then they just carry on, story after story after story, to the same people never designed for it. People with so many tropes trampling over them, they have no narrative core, and the ruling mind doesn't help either. Some of these stories are right, some of them are so very wrong. More hardly even stories at all, not even parables. Oh, there are three minds here. Oh, there are three minds here, braided together like the lengths of Rapunzel's hair. Two of those are Blake, black and gold, honour and self-sacrifice shot through with torture and pain. The third shimmers and twists as the other stands bind it into place. The same gold I see in Blake mixed with a shimmering white light. Humact, then. The universe is such a mass of light and of pain, of chaos and entropy, and self-realization and free will, that I cannot see a path to follow or to turn. My book. In this place, I will need the book to show me where the story goes. But in this pandemonic, chaotic mess, I cannot see it until... As the warrior touches the book, his path is set, and the story opens. A clear, ordered path in this chaos opens, and my scene is set, and I appear in the tavern where the warrior, the scout, and the mother are preparing for the day's quest. A quest I realize that I must lead them through. I can hardly bear to think it, let such creatures of chaos lead my ordered, storied questing. In my ordered, storied world, but so must it be. They must understand the stories. I need, however, to bring them to me. I am not enough of this world to bring people from it. This is a world of adventure and questing. I need someone of both the quest and the story to open the door between them. I tell the adventurers the story of the mind that made me, the outline of their part in this tale, before I leave them with Cyril, who crafts a tale mixing adventure and fairy tale to such an extent that the world becomes confused around them, and when they look out of their beleaguered and battered bar, they are on the sun-soaked, summery sweep of story, and their education can begin. Adventurers on a quest are brave and true. And the two devotees of Humact both began by offering their devotions to their god. The mother stood aside. Sordan is not a creature of the day, generally. And the scout offered up her right and proper respect. The warrior, however, was an ass. Being disrespectful to a god with whom you rest your soul, while speaking directly to his aspect, standing on the plane of his existence, is not the wisest move one can make. The warrior stood by his lack of conviction, however, and went forth with the gifts of his god ripped from his grasp. And the story began. Once upon a time, deep in the forest, lived a grandmother. The grandmother was old and frail, and lived in her old cottage deep in the woods. Every few days, her dutiful daughter would send her own daughter a package of food and supplies for the grandmother. The granddaughter was young and faithful, and she loved more than anything a riding hood that her grandmother had made for her, the bright and cheerful colour of red blood. The granddaughter wore it so often, in fact, that she was known for more than that, that she was known for that more than any other thing, and the people of her village knew her chiefly by her little red riding hood. One bright morning, Red skipped through the dark woods where her grandmother lived, with a fresh basket of bread and of cakes. The grandmother, however, was not the only person living in the woods. There were voles, and there were foxes and wolves as well, but none could best the very biggest, baddest wolf. The big bad wolf had been very much like its brothers, a bit slightly bigger and more ruthless, but years of sheer survival had built into it an almost stopping killing machine. Not 5 years ago it had taken the life of the forester himself, an experienced woodsman who had been keeping this forest strong all his life, and whose granddaughter was now happily skipping through the forest and whose granddaughter was now happily skipping through the overgrown and neglected pathways, not realizing that the encroaching bushes provided cover for animals not half as lovable as the mice and the bluebirds her imagination supplied her as forest creatures. But the big bad wolf was not in the bushes. After a little while of skipping through the forest, Red got to her grandmother's cottage. The gate was unlocked, so she swung it open and into Granny's garden, rich with the smells of the herbs she used to flavour her soups, her stews, and her roast dinners. Deep in the back of the garden, overhung by a shady oak tree, was a grandfather's shed, untouched since his death, where he chopped the wood and whittled tiny little prizes for Red to find when she was young. The door had fallen open, and the bleak darkness within sent a shiver down Red's spine as she wondered what could have got in. But the big bad wolf was not in the woodshed. With some of the joy of the day dampened in her heart, Red approached the door, where she froze entirely. The entire door was splinters, shattered into pieces with the unmistakable marks of claws down the bright red carpet. The pictures of Red with her mother and her father hung crooked on the wall, and all was very silent and still, until the kitchen door creaked open ahead of her. Red pulled a sharp, wicked knife from her basket, for she was innocent but not stupid, and padded silently towards the open door. But the big bad wolf wasn't in the kitchen, and the kitchen was spotless, as clean as sparkling, as Granny always kept it. Smoke escaped the oven, where fresh cookies were burning into crumbly black lumps, and bread sat with rapidly melting butter on the table, and again there was silence. With a grace of movement that would have made the scout herself double-take, Little Red Riding Hood creeped up the stairs one by separate one, until she reached the small landing which led to her granny's bedroom, where she found her granny. The old lady was on the bed, in a sagging, bloody mess. Her blood splattered all over the walls around her, up to the whitewashed ceiling above, up the railings and down the skirting boards, a cheerful and bright coating of scarlet that matched Red's favourite cloak almost precisely. From the wardrobe to the window, everything was splattered in blood. Everything up to, and including, the wolf who stood over her grandmother's chaotic corpse, teeth dripping with her remains. Red ran, and the wolf gave chase. As she pelted down the overgrown paths back to her home, she noticed nothing, save of her own possible survival. She didn't see when two other smaller wolves instinctively chased after running prey. And in fact, the only thing she noticed was when she hit a clearing and saw her possible salvation. The mother, the warrior, the scout. With a cry of help, she ran towards them, and the brave adventurers attacked the massive wolf and his smaller brethren, and soon they were victorious, and Little Red Riding Hood, in an act of universal balance, feasted on the dying entrails of her grandparents' killer. "No, you can't do that," said the warrior. "Yes, she can, she must," said Blake. That's how the story ends. The end. And so there was darkness in this bright and cheerful wood, was there? There was evil lurking under these clear and sunny skies. More stories lurk within this evil, and so the adventurers continued back into the forest.